This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Caroline and Uma. Education is a fundamental human right that is essential for the development and future of our children. Every parent in Malaysia strives to provide the best education for their child, and yet millions of children around the world remain deprived of educational opportunities, many as a result of poverty and war. As of the end of February 2014, there are some 142,831 refugees and asylum seekers registered with the UNHCR here in Malaysia, of which 29,774 of them are children below the age of 18, and less than half of these children have any access to any form of education.
Right, besides the refugee children, many Orang Asli children and orphans here in Malaysia struggle to go to school because both they and their parents lack the means. A large number of children on the islands of the east coast of Sabah lack access to schools. They actually have to loiter in the streets looking for food. So here in the studio to tell us more about the plight of education for underprivileged children in Malaysia, Dr. G. Balamurugam of Trek for a Cause and Hasbah Marjuni of the Muslim Aid Organization. Welcome. Nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
All right. Guys, tell us a bit about yourselves and your organization's involvement with underprivileged children. Dr. Bala, what does Trek for a Cause do?
Okay. Trek for a Cause is just a bunch of amateur trekkers.
Right.
We go trekking. But after years of trekking, we decided that besides trekking, we should try to do something good for the society as well. So Trek for a Cause is a bunch of trekkers who trek and in the process raise funds for worthy causes. And we have chosen to work together with Muslim Aid to support their education fund.
What were you guys doing before this? Just trekking?
Just trekking for fun.
Okay.
Which is always nice when,
yes,
you know, that translates into doing some good as well, right? Hafsa, we've had you on the Evening Edition before, but, you know, just to remind our listeners, what does Muslim Aid Organization do?
We do a lot of things, one of which, education is one of our biggest challenge in this country. What we have done is basically we are the implementing organization for Trek for a Cause. The trekkers go around, you know, raising funds. And what we do is we actually identify the recipient of the funds that are collected. Okay. So, you know, it's a win-win situation. They help us raise money. We teach the kids.
All right, so tell us a little bit about who these funds go to exactly, who you're focusing on, and why you decided to focus on these groups specifically.
Okay, the policy at Muslim Aid is basically to help the most needy, okay? Of course, you know, whenever I talk to people about helping refugee kids or stateless kids, the one of the responses, the usual remark would be, why are we helping them? You know, a lot of our kids are also poor, are also underprivileged. However, let's look at the level of neediness. Let's say if you were an orphan, but you are at least a citizen, so you do have the opportunity to go to school. Or if you are an Orang Asli kid, you know, actually, the orphans and the Orang Asli kids, I categorize them as the richest of the lot of these four groups, mm-hmm, because they have citizenship, at least. It's just a matter of what are their needs, you know, and at least in this country, you don't have to pay school fees, you know, not the cost is not too high. And there are many, many NGOs and also companies or even government help for these kids. Mm-hmm. If only you look, you know, there are a lot of help. However, for the refugee children or the stateless children, nobody, you know, is really helping them. At the moment, the UNHCR has done a lot. There are about 120 learning centres for refugee kids all over Peninsula.
Right.
Yeah. However, in the case of the East Coast Sabah, there is no UNHCR there. There is no government help, and we feel that they are the most
Needy.
Needy.
So tell us exactly who these groups are. Can you tell us who you're focusing on in this respect, Trek for Cause?
As I said, there are four focus groups that we are looking at. Mm-hmm. One is the stateless children of the East Coast of Sabah, Sempurna site. There's at least 49 islands there, and there are teeming with children. We did some population census on these islands, and you will find that for each household, there'll be like a set of parents with 12, 13 kids. And they don't go to school because they don't have documentation. You know, there are schools on some of these islands. You'll be surprised to find there's one school with 10 teachers, but only 8 kids. 10 teachers.
Wow.
Yeah. It's the truth.
Yeah.
Seriously.
We're going to delve into the details one by one in just a little bit. But in the meantime, can you just very briefly tell us who the other three groups are?
Okay. Number one, as I mentioned, the stateless children.
Mm-hmm.
Refugee children in Semenanjung. I think Uma has given the statistics, about 29,000 of them.
Right.
I think about 15,000 are off school-going age.
Okay.
And at the moment, even with the 120 schools, each school would only cater to about 50 to 100 kids. So very, very small numbers of them have gone to school.
Right. So the other two?
The other two are the Orang Asli children and the orphans.
Right.
Yes.
All right. When we come back, we will ask Dr. Bala about MyTrek and how that works and just how they plan to raise money for this cause. You're listening to The Evening Edition on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Evening Edition with Caroline and Uma. And today, we're talking about education for underprivileged children here in Malaysia. We have Dr. G. Balamurugan, my team leader for Trek for a Cause, as well as Hapsam Arjuni of the Muslim Aid Organization. Dr. Bala, we've been talking about the groups of children that Muslim Aid Organization is targeting with this help. Now, the Trek for a Cause and the organization and the effort that you're putting together, it's about raising awareness and fundraising. Am I correct?
That's right.
So tell us more about that.
Okay. People often ask, what has mountain climbing got to do with children? Every trek that we do creates a lot of publicity. If you go to the Everest Base Camp, a lot of people follow our trek.
Of course.
That provides us the opportunity to highlight other issues. So when we link a major expedition with the cause, that raises the profile of that cause. So therefore, we piggyback on the publicity that our track creates and use that publicity to raise funds.
And how exactly do you do that?
Oh, well, we tell people we need money. We need money for the children, not for our... No, all the trackers pay their own expense.
Yes.
We don't touch a cent from that. So we tell... it's actually a very symbolic thing. We tell people, if you've seen the children... mountain climbing is difficult, but the life that the kids go through is even more difficult. And we always tell people that our hardship is only for 2 weeks when we are in the mountain. When I come back from the mountains, I'm back to my comfortable house. These children face the same hardship year, day in, day out, 365 days in a year. So what we do is we basically start off with our friends and our colleagues and my clients. Very simple. We say that we are raising fund, give us money. And last year we raised about 100,000 ringgit.
Oh, wow.
Which mostly, then maybe Hapsa will explain later. And this year we aim to raise 500,000 ringgit.
Now, have you or members of your team actually gone to visit these children to see what the situations are like? Tell us what you think.
It's depressing. If you go to the islands of Sempurna, it's depressing. You have thousands of children, thousands. Because in poverty, the number of children per family tends to be very high. So what Hapsa says is right, 8 to 10 kids per family. They all don't go to school. They all gamble. They sniff glue. And there are teenagers on the islands who can't read or write. And some of them go to the mainland, end up in a life of crime.
Mm-hmm.
Some get into prostitution. All these sort of things. So therefore, it's very depressing.
So there's education is only one aspect of it. I mean, there needs to be, there's healthcare issues as well.
Yes.
And there's social issues. There's security, crime issues.
Oh, yes. We can't solve all the world's problems. So we are focusing on education. But Muslim Aid also has programs on water and sanitation, providing water supply and building toilets. And I think it's quite important to understand what is the most important need. And if you ask the community, sometimes education might not be top of their list. Very basic thing, we want water.
Mm.
So I think we need to tackle one thing at a time. And Muslim Aid has tackled the basic things like water and sanitation. And I think if you don't go into education, you'll never break out of the cycle of poverty. So right. Therefore, education is very important.
And it has to happen at the same time, right? It can't be one first and then the other. I mean, all of this has to happen simultaneously.
That's right.
Hafsa, when it comes to the money then, because 100,000 and this year, hopefully you reach your target of 500,000, what does Muslim Aid actually use that money for?
Okay. Last year, the campaign was very short, actually, less than 3 months, and we managed to raise about 100,000. We have used the money to... we have set up our own... We can't call it school, what we call Knowledge Center in Ampang. So we have used the money to set up that school basically from scratch. You know, we managed to get hold of what they call Dewan Bacaan, reading hall. So we renovated that, turned that into classroom, very basic. So now we have about 100 children enrolled, 4 teachers. So the money goes to paying the teachers, buying books, buying uniform, because they have, you know, they have nothing.
What's been the response so far to the efforts that have already been put in place?
We have done the actual launch of the school. So people are quite receptive to the idea, because our approach is also to appease the local community. So we don't just go and set up a school with a refugee community.
Mm-hmm.
We also approach the village head, the what they call the committee of the housing estate, the imam of the nearest mosque, even the district police people, and we invited them all to come to the launch of the school, so that, you know, it becomes a community thing.
That's
rather
right.
Than just
an effort to include all stakeholders.
Yes.
Because of course you want to get these children off the streets as well, because
yes.
that
yes.
affects the community, the larger community, whether it's a so case of crime, whether it's a case of poverty. So the community should be, it's in their own interest,
yes.
actually.
That's right.
True, it's true.
Yeah. Well, while it being in their own interest, is this something, because I suppose it's one thing to recognize that, you know, it's important for my kids to go to school. But say, for example, if I don't have enough money, you know, day to day to feed the other 12 children that I have, perhaps it's best to let the older ones go out and work and, you know, perhaps busk for money, that sort of thing. Is that, I mean, do you come into contact with problems like that?
Well, I think, I don't know about the statistics, but the perception is most of the beggars on the streets in KL are mostly Rohingya children,
mm-hmm.
Refugee children. So by putting them in school, it will actually lessen that, you know, the number,
right.
I hope.
Right.
And then it is also to teach the parents about the importance of their children getting education, especially the girls.
Because is that still a problem?
Yes. The girls get married off at a very, very young age. I know of problems in the other schools where, you know, children were taken out of school at the age of 10, 12 to be married to, you know, to people of their own countrymen.
So how difficult has it been to try to convince the parents?
Parents
of that mindset specifically.
Okay, it's interesting. We find that as the months go by, okay, well, they didn't really trust us, okay? Suddenly this bunch of Malaysian come and say, let me help your children, right? So during the first month, the mothers actually sit in class. And I think they were evaluating what is being taught to their children, because we do not employ anyone from among their community to be the teachers,
mm-hmm.
because they already have their own people teaching them to read you know, Quran or the religious whatever. So we don't touch that. Mm-hmm. We understand that's their culture. So our teachers teach them the other things like math, science, so-called secular subjects.
Fundamentals. Yeah.
Yeah. So of course I understand this you know, whether the parents would trust us or not.
Sure.
So what you know, it's okay. We didn't chase them away. Let them sit in class. And then 2 weeks after that, they decided not to sit in class. They decided to be outside looking in from the windows. That's quite creepy too. But now the parents are not too near the school. They are now congregating under some trees around the school.
So right. it's from a bond.
It's time,
trust.
I guess, you
yeah.
know, the
yeah.
they know that you're not leading the child down the path of evil. Then yeah. they begin to trust you. And
of
I guess
course.
That'll open up more doors.
Yeah.
We're talking about education for underprivileged children in Malaysia with Hafsa Marjuni from the Muslim Aid Organization, as well as Dr. G. Balamurugan, my team leader for Trek for a Cause. After the news, a little bit about the Bajau Laut, Sabah's unwanted boat people. Right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Uma Pagan Ampeke Pagan.
Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh.
And we're talking today about education for underprivileged children. It's a wide scope based on immigrants, the Rohingya community, the Bajau Laut, the Orang Asli. We're speaking to Dr. G. Balamurugan as well as Hafsa Marjuni. Dr. Bala is my team leader for Trek for a Cause. He's raising money and awareness. And of course, Hafsa Marjuni is from Muslim Aid Organization. She does a lot of work in Sabah. We've been talking about the Rohingyas. We've been talking about access to education for those children. But the Bajau Laut are in a very interesting predicament, I guess, because, you know, they're widely considered, the unwanted boat people, but they've always been there and they've been around, right? So talk to us about the predicament of the Bajau Laut people.
The Bajau Laut people are the Orang Asli of the seas. They've always been in the waters of Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia for hundreds of years. That's they are not Filipinos, they are not Indonesians, they are not Malaysian. They were there.
They're genuinely
people of the sea. They were there before these countries existed. And in recent years, they tend to congregate nearer to Malaysia because the economic opportunities are better. Mm. But the difficulty in helping them is a large portion of the population, including the Malaysian population, tends to lump them together with the other illegal immigrants. The Filipinos and Indonesians who come here looking for a job.
Because they don't have papers either.
Yes.
And the problem is the stigma attached to that.
Yes. Yes. And so, therefore, even for politicians, it's a very sensitive area to go into because you don't win any political points by helping them. They are not voters and you're only going to aggravate your fellow supporters.
Mm.
So they'll ask, why are you helping them and not helping us? Why are you helping these people? You're only going to make the other, more of them come.
So within just that community alone then, suppose these individuals are not looked at as Malaysians or one of our own.
Yes.
So Hafsa, when it comes to the Bajau Laut and how to help them as well with regard to education and schools, what are the numbers like with regards to children? Do you know?
Oh. Okay.
Because they live a primarily nomadic existence. I'm assuming they go to where the best economic opportunities are.
Okay, we did some population census with the cooperation of the islands, what do you call that? The JKKK, the Security and Development Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So each island is a village. So they would have a village head and then the JKKK chief or something. So what they have done, because I told them, I need you to register everyone. No matter whether they are living on boats or on land or on sea,
mm-hmm.
So they would have different columns. So those with identity card would have a different section, and those who are called the locals call them Bajau Palau.
Palau,
you know, that's the word they use. So they will be listed. So I actually have for some of these islands a very detailed demography, and. That's why I can say that for each household, for a set of parents, you'll have between 8 to 12 children.
Right.
But problem is, it aggravates the problem. You know, there's children everywhere. If you come with us to visit the islands, you know, they're just everywhere. And at some of these islands, especially, for example, like Mabul, which is a very complex society we have there. We have 5-star resorts on one side, and we have the village on the other side. And within the village, we'll have people with IC, people with red IC, people with immigration card, people with nothing. Okay, so, and the children everywhere. Seriously, even at 10 p.m. at night, there'll still be children on the streets playing.
So tell me, the anything from red IC and below, I guess, whether it's red IC with immigration card and with nothing, you have absolutely no access to anything, right? In terms of education.
In terms of education, red IC are supposed to be able to attend government school. However, last year there was some, I don't know, confusion or whatever. So many children were kicked out of school because their parents have red IC. However, I think it's been rectified, but it depends on the individual school. If the headmaster is, I think,
sympathetic,
you get some kind of,
How can that be? What schools are these? Are they national schools? Isn't there a standard guideline that's set for, you know, who can come to school and who can't?
Well, but the thing is, I think we can blame the headmasters as well. Although they are a federal department, basically under Ministry of Education, but they are also under the jurisdiction of the District Education Office. So if you have little Napoleons there, what can you do? For example, in Mabul, we have a private tuition center that was set up by some of the resort owners just to help this stateless children to get some sort of schooling. And it's called School of Hope. It is not a formally,
recognized,
registered name, okay? It's just a center for kids to come and learn ABC. And the district office came and told the school to close because of the word
school.
So...
Well, it's quite shocking, though.
It's a money-spinning
tourist area, if you think about it.
Of course. Yes. And you want to support the generations who are actually helping spin that money. That's because these are the people who are working at your resorts and are working for your economy.
Yes.
So did they actually shut down the school or did they change it to Center of Hope?
It was shut down.
Okay.
For about more than 6 months, the kids had nowhere to go. And somehow they managed to register a society with the help of some people from KL. Okay, so it had to be done in KL.
Federally.
All right. So they have now registered something that is called Mabul Kids Society. So this learning center is now Mabul Kids Society.
Wow.
So shame.
Tell me, in July of last year, there was some talk by the Deputy Home Minister about giving those without citizenship some kind of status to ensure that they are given education or at least to ensure that they're not being neglected. Has there been any progress on that or you haven't heard anything since?
No.
But the situation is extremely complex. You asked a question about numbers, how many people are there. I don't think anyone has a clue about the number of Bajalaut people in the waters. Some estimates range as high as 50,000. Which is
a big number.
Which means there could be 30,000 children.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think anyone, because they are documentless and they are all over the place, nobody has a good grasp on this extent of the problem.
So what happens to these children normally? I mean, do they then just get into the family business of going where economy is and traversing the oceans and going from port to port? Is that what happens if they don't go to school and don't get a formal education?
Oh, well, it depends where they are, okay? Like in Mabul, some of them have actually erected some shanty-looking shacks. I would say shacks, not houses. So they go around harassing tourists for 10 cents or 20 cents, and then they gamble. Or if they collect enough, they can buy glue and sniff.
How do they gamble, excuse me?
Oh, bingo.
Right.
Yes.
So there are bingo centres run for children to gamble.
Yes.
I have photos. I'll show you afterwards.
That's amazing.
Wow.
The gambling starts at 11 a.m.
Wow.
Why 11? Because that's when housewives finish
because
their work.
Because it's 5 p.m. somewhere
no,
else.
No, that's
the
when the housewives finish their work.
Okay.
They finish cooking, they all come out to gamble.
So let me ask you this then. Do you have problems with, isn't it better to go and spend your day gambling rather than spend your day educating yourself and working hard?
Well, at least for the kids who have attended the School of Hope, for example, when you know how to read and write and how to count money, at least you can work at the resorts. You can work in the kitchen. Right. You can, although...
You're skilled a little.
Yeah, something. Something. And I see some of the graduates of the school actually working at the souvenir shop. So, and I must say, seriously, I'm proud of the girls. They are very diligent. And the resort owner who started the school also hired some of them to work with him. So
why is it you're seeing more progress with the girls? I take it you focus on the gender for a reason.
Because I see them working, whereas the boys were just, loitering around.
But that happens scale too.
I'm just going to look at our
universities.
Oh, that's true. Enrollment.
Where are the boys?
Yeah, where are the boys? Enrollment, female enrollment is at an all-time high. But Hafsa, when it comes to education for these children then, since we're not seeing much progress on the part of the federal government or even state governments in regards to giving these people access to schools, are these centres and these knowledge houses and these privately run tuition centres, if you will, is that the only foreseeable future?
Unless the government changes their policy, that is what we are doing,
But this relies entirely on the goodwill of Malaysians and private citizens and organisations such as yours and Dr. Bala organising fundraising events. It's entirely rooted in that, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
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 And also some foreign funders. Not all of them only support, bad things, so-called. There are also organisations and foundations that actually support access to education. For example, UNHCR has started a new campaign that they're having with the Qatar charity. Statistically, there are 57 million children who are not schooling all over the world. So if you leave it to the UNHCR to tackle every one of them is a huge task. And in the case of Sabah, the UNHCR is not there because they are not categorized as refugees. They are not victims of natural catastrophe or whatever. These are just people who...
have been marginalized by the system, clearly.
Yes.
Mm. Well, so Dr. Bala, Trek for a Cause this year is no simple trek. Mm-hmm. You're going up to base camp.
Yes.
All the way up to Everest. So tell me, how can people get involved in supporting your cause in this trek?
Okay, let me start with an open invitation to BFM. If you can, you're welcome to join us.
On the trek?
On the trek.
Okay. you will hear silence in this room.
Yeah, that's
room.
Right.
It's a good cause,
but maybe we shall target the more athletic of the BFMers.
Yes.
We are going in September to the Everest Base Camp. It's a 18-day journey to and back. It's tough, it's cold, and it's lung-sapping environment. That means there's very little oxygen up at base camp. So even tying your shoelace can be a major effort.
Sounds like a Friday night out in KL,
tying your shoelace.
Tying your shoelaces to make an effort. But Dr. Bala, when you say inviting people, how many people are you expecting to take part in this trek?
And how much will they have to come up with on their own to actually pay for it?
We did the trek for a cause in Annapurna Range last year. 15 of us took part. 12 of us took part, or the 15 was the previous base camp. 12 of us took part, and almost everyone made it except one or two.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about cost. The average trekker will probably have to cough up about 8,000 ringgit of their own money.
Okay.
Just to complete the trek.
Okay. And what kind of physical training do these people need to take before they go up to base camp?
You have to be reasonably fit. I don't know. I can't describe reasonably fit. I think I am reasonably fit, but you don't have to be super fit. You don't have to run marathons, or as long as you are reasonably fit, you can, and you follow rules, you'll make it.
Okay, so how can someone like me, who's not reasonably fit, support your cause?
You look fit enough.
I'm just trying to get you up there.
I know, I'm trying to avoid the hike. Yeah. But well, how can the everyday citizen then support your cause?
How can people who don't want to hike support the cause? I think let's just get straight up there and say it.
Give money. Very simple. If you can't join the trek, donate to Muslim Aid or the Trek for a Cause Fund and help us raise awareness.
All right, so you can actually go to a website, trek4cause.blogspot.com, and you can get all the information there.
Yes.
And of course, you can just mail at muslimaid.org.my. You can send them an email and you can get in touch with Hafsa, and she will be able to give you a lot more information as well.
Yeah. We're also doing this year's Trek for a Cause in conjunction with the Hari Malaysia, Hari Merdeka period, in conjunction with the Say Something Nice campaign. Have you heard of that?
I have,
with Anas Zubedi.
Yes, that's right.
So we are tying both campaigns together.
So fantastic. Say something nice while hiking up Everest. I think that's a very, very
good
cause.
That's a challenge. That's going to be a challenge.
It is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, but it certainly sounds fantastic. It sounds like you're doing very, very good work indeed. Do keep it up. Good luck with the trek, of course.
Thank you.
We've been talking about education for underprivileged children with Hafsa Marjuni of the Muslim Aid Organization, as well as Dr. G. Balamurugan, my team leader for Trek for a Cause. Like I said earlier, you can get more information on trekforcause.blogspot.com. You've been listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.